Okay, we're taping the Bible Nation Near East. Today is April 12th. And we're on page 71 in Shalom Paul's book on cuneiform law. And the first thing he notices is that practically the full sampling of what he is working with across Mesopotamia, Egypt, and the Middle East, is that they're all covering this very unusually remote issue of miscarriage. Why should that be such an important issue? At the beginning of Baba Kama, oxes gore in every society. It hits a dog in every society where people might be damaged. Fires are lit and animals eat from the crops of a neighbor's garden. So we have to have laws about these things, I understand. But miscarriage, someone that causes a miscarriage? When was the last time you heard that? That someone caused a miscarriage? She goes to the hospital, she expects to have a baby. It's just another shout out to you, Chani. I hope that we have a baby soon. It's already overdue for a bit. My daughter. But to have a law about someone who causes a miscarriage, it's so remote. You just have so much you can put in the law code. You know what I'm saying? So what Paul says is that these ancient law codes were aware of each other. Right? Who is the very first to put out the law code? Hammurabi is the oldest and the form that we have. There might be some older stuff. We just have a law here and there, but certainly still hundreds of years before the giving of the Torah. This is a crucial moment in this course. What does this mean? Torah borrow from the Hammurabi? Of course it did, when I say it did, it means because when we're setting up society in Israel, there's going to be circumstances that confront us in our society that was similar to what confronted them. There will have to be laws about kidnapping. There will have to be laws about how you treat your parents, right? How those laws manifest themselves might be very different, as we saw about kidnapping and parents. Namely, that the Torah is much more strict about those infractions than any other code in the ancient world. Okay, so in some societies, if you steal a sheep, they'll kill you. By the way, in this country, cattle rustling in 1840 out west, they string you up in a second if you stole someone's cattle. In the Torah, you have to pay four or five times what you stole. This is meant to be a deterrent, right? Okay, so the question of who borrows from whom, the thesis is that miscarriage is not really such an important issue in the ancient world, but that the codes borrow from each other, and here is where things can get sticky regarding the Torah. Open up to Parashas Perkaf Aleph. And it treats the forced miscarriage the same way as it appears in the other codes, that it was caused by an inadvertent or even perhaps an accidental beating from A, who meant to hit B, possibly even lethally, with a lethal blow, but instead he hit C and either caused the loss of the children or the loss of the woman he hit, and Kal v'chomer the children. Now, as I said last class, the difference between the Catholic Church and the Gemara and Baba Kama is what did the Torah mean when it said the lo yiyeh ason? Okay? Got it? The Church's position has to explain the yotzfuyu lo deha with the possibility that those children are departed from her alive. However you look at it, the Torah is calling an unborn fetus a child. Right? That's it. The Gemara suggests two different explanations, whether it means the mother is killed or the baby is killed. And the Church calls the baby being killed murder. Hence the Mishnah at the end of Masechet Trumas says that if a baby while being born starts to threaten its mother, the permission is very graphic, you kill the baby, just, to save the mother's life, the baby's not born yet. church does not have that opinion. Right? They will not allow an abortion even to save the mother's life. Right? Our halachic decision on that comes out of how we do so. Okay, so we did this last class. Today I'd like to comment on the end of this section here, which now if you see Pasuk Chaf Gimel, we'll get to in a moment after we take this question.
Why can't we just say that the basic human desire is procreate and having a
basic,
child...
The basic
basic human desire is procreate and continue on your genetic code. And having a child back then is extremely dangerous, so they take... And so miscarriages, especially caused by someone else, would be something taken very seriously.
The problem is that miscarriage was a common thing along until relatively recently.
Right.
You know, and children largely did not live into adulthood. Most of your children did not live to adulthood. So you want to argue that this should be, you know, it should be in every code because it's such a common thing. But if it's in tort law, who are you blaming for that? The husband will blame his wife. Why did you give birth to a child that didn't get to live?
I can see that.
A doctor.
I can see back then that happening.
Okay, I mean that's.
People would blame their wife for giving birth.
Everybody knows that the doctor who has to have the highest insurance is the obstetrician. Everybody knows.
They would give that otherwise sometimes for giving birth to girls.
Right, but in these codes, it's a miscarriage that is brought upon by an inadvertent beating from someone else. Right. Not because she just failed to deliver a living child. Right? Okay, but it's an interesting concept that you're dealing with all along. Things that are common in your society, you're going to have more treatment of that thing in law. Right? I'll give it as an interesting example. Between Parshas Kisetse and Parshas Mishpatim, are you familiar that those two are similar in scope? Right? Devarim is repetitious of many mitzvahs earlier, right? And Devarim is Mishpatim is largely Kisetse. You agree? Right? But Kisetse has a lot more family law, and Mishpatim has a lot more tort law. This Mishpatim has very little family law, and Devarim, Kisetse has a lot more. Why the difference? Why is Mishpatim so much more connected to Torah law? And there's no psukim like this in Parshas Kisetse. Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yad tachas yad, regel tachas regel. Right? This pasuk is a very famous trivia question. It's the only pasuk like this in the whole Tanakh. The whole Tanakh, which is, when you look at it, tell me. Pasuk Chaf Dalet, Shmos Chaf Aleph Chaf Dalet. The only pasuk in Tanakh. Where every word that appears in the pasuk appears at least once. At least twice. There's no such thing of any other pasuk in Islam. Every word in the pasuk appears at least twice. Okay? Alright, anyway, just put it out there. Someone asks you that question and offers you a lot of money, and now you know what it is. Okay, so that hence the lex talionis. You take out an eye, your eye gets taken out. Right? That's a simple shot, isn't it? Okay. Now, I must tell you that this is a dispute. This is the pshat in the Gemara. The pshat in the pasuk is obvious. Right? The pshat in the Gemara, though, there are shoulders who say that there's a different pshat in the Gemara, but the pshat in the Gemara is that there are two tanoim who have a disagreement over whether this is mamish or not. Right? There seems to be a tana in the Sefer Baba Kama, Rabbi Eliezer, who simply pshuto says, Yad tachas yad mamish. You want to darshan that for me? Right? Yad tachas yad, ayin tachas ayin, regal tachas regal means you hit him and his leg had to be amputated, the judge will judge you and you're going to go to the hospital and they will amputate your leg. Right? That's the shot. Okay? So, and when someone says mamish, that seems to be what he holds. However, the Gemara's conclusion, the Paskin like individual opinion. The Gemara's conclusion is the Chachomim that say that no, that Yad Ayin Tachas Ayin This word means that you do something instead of the eye. Right? Especially since in Vayikra it says, or even here, Vinosato. You see Vinosato Nefesh Tachas Nefesh? Okay, Vinosato Nefesh Tachas Nefesh. I must tell you that this argument made by Shmuel David Lutzato and others is a little disingenuous in its context. In other words, Vinosato means when someone takes out an eye, right? You don't take out the criminal's eye. He has to give something. He has to pay something. Right? Okay, what's the disingenuous nature of this? Is that, where does that word appear? It appears up here. Well, hello. The conclusion of the Gemara is that there is less talionis in one area of halacha. It is. That's where we differentiate with ancient Near Eastern law. Some nations, but get this, have the death penalty for stealing, but they don't have the death penalty for murder. How? Because they killed this family's father, right? What's it going to help my family that you kill that man? Let's go to the courts. I will make our count claim, right? He'll make a counterclaim of what he has to pay us for us to give the judge clemency. The judge should determine clemency. Pay us 500,000 shekels, and we'll say the man can live. You got it? Problem with this, it sounds just, doesn't it?
Both parties agree,
why not? What's the slippery slope of this opinion?
Rich, you can buy murder.
Right. Rich people will buy murder. Right? I can afford whatever they're going to come up with. Right? So you be careful with that. Right. But you see when the Forshim say that here's the proof that tachas doesn't mean the eye of mamish. It means something instead of the eye that you can give. You get it now? Right? But wait a second. It says in the Sanhedrin Nefesh Tachas Nefesh. Okay, but so they just have to read the Gemara. Shaddal is correct. What is the case where it says in the Sanhedrin Nefesh Tachas Nefesh? Someone put back his arm to punch someone, right? And he may argue in court, well, if I had punched a man as hard as I punched her, I wouldn't have killed him. I punched a woman who was in a frail state of late pregnancy, and that's why I killed. It's tough. Right? You know what I'm saying? I didn't slap you hard enough that you barely feel it, but it was a 2-day-old baby. It killed the baby. Right? Doesn't matter. You meant to hit someone. You hit someone else. But, I mean, let's push comes to shove. What would be the halacha? What's the Gemara's conclusion? If I meant to hit you, but instead I reared back and hit a pregnant woman and killed her. What would be the halacha? Halacha is this person that also has to pay. It's a tort. It's not murder. Murder is only... I think it's the law in this country. You can only be put to death for murder, for what's called murder one, which is
planned
intentional murder. I think this country also has, if I plan murder A, but then murder B in the process, I think that there, in some states that's also considered murder one. Alright? Okay. So let's continue with this. Ayin tachas ayin, shein, yad, regel. Those are things that are, you know, they're body parts that will fall off and won't grow back. What about a wound? So the Marshall continues. Kviya tachas kviya, pesa tachas patsa, chabura tachas chabura. Actually, the two psukim where every word appears at least twice. Chavdal and chavdal. Right? Okay, but it's even, now kviya, pesa, and chabura are all three different words for wounds. One is where you break the skin, one is where you don't break the skin, one is a black and blue mark, one is a broken off, break. It doesn't matter, really matter. But there are, even if the thing will heal, you take off someone's leg and it's not healing. Alright? So what happens? You give someone such a blow, He's got a black and blue mark all across his arm, so you go to court, judge what happened, the witnesses determine what happened. So you're going to give him a black and blue mark right in the same place, according to the opinion that's mamish. However, and as I said, the Gemara concludes that this is meant to be not mamish, but you pay a fine. Now, the Rambam, in the Mor Nevuchim, we all know what the Mor Nevuchim was written for. It's a more, it's a guide for Nevuchim. And Nevuchim does not necessarily mean a perplexed person who's just quizzical and doesn't know what's going on. No. It's a perplexed person who wants more than just it's a Xeris HaKasov, so that's how it is. Right? So the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim hints, and his son Avraham, in his Perush al HaTorah, Avraham ben Rambam, he says that my father taught me that Rabbi Eliezer was correct in the time of the Torah, right? As they were leaving Egypt. And as the Torah Sheba'al Peh began to unfold with a changing political and communal situation, that Ayin Tachasai no longer was, and that's why Torah writes it this way, no operative as Lex Talionis. This is how he explained it, that a slave mentality needed such a draconian response to how to deal with your issues, don't deal with them physically. Because what you do to that person will be done to you. What's a greater deterrent? If you blind his eye, you'll be blinded, or you'll have to pay him damages? I think the first one is a greater deterrent. So recent slaves need a greater deterrent. So the Torah says, Ayin Tachasai, and records it in a way which can be darshaned to say at some point it can no longer be. I must tell you, this: while this sounds very radical, right, this kind of perush, I must tell you that a perush like this appears often in the perush of Shmuel David Lutzato. I mentioned it. We read some passages from him on the very first day of the semester, known as Shadal, 19th century great, he was a grandnephew of the Ramchal, Moshe Chaim Tzad. But I'll tell you this, I found a parish like this in the Vilna Gaon. Right? Just to prove that the Vilna Gaon, where do I find it? What does the Torah say to do with the goat that has the sins of Israel placed on its head on Yom Kippur? Just what does the Torah say to do?
Send it to the desert.
Just send it to the desert. Right? Shlach el ish iti hamidbar. It doesn't say what to do with it. Just ascend it into the desert. Comes the Gemara and says, in Sefer Sima, it's a Mishnah, that what do you do with the goat? You throw it off a cliff. Azazel means, the Gemara's darshan, Azazel means a sharp cliff, and he over jagged rocks, and he dies before he gets to the bottom. Right? Okay. Right, that's, I'm not telling you the Kiddush right now. So where did the Gemara get throw him off a cliff when it never says so in the Torah? Nowhere in Parshas Chukos or anywhere else. Where did he get it? Okay. So it's actually related to something in this week's Parsha. See if you can figure it out. In this week's Parsha, the Torah says that in order to become Tahor, a leper has to take two birds. Right? One bird they shech, they take a blood, and they put some blood on the earlobe, on his thumb, and on his big toe. And the other bird gets set free. So the Gemara asks a question about the kachshir nature of that bird that went free. Because if that bird has kachshir attached to it, how are we setting free a bird that if someone finds it, he's ma'ila, he's chayav ma'ila, he's eating kachshir, he may be using kachshir. You know what I'm saying? We're sending all these birds free, they will come. So the Gemara answers, the bird was never kachshir. It was never, because if it was kachshir, we wouldn't set it free. Right? Now, can you respond to me? It's an amazing thing. The Vilna Gaon says this. And it appears in Shadal also. When the Maestro were in the Midbar, and it's Yom Kippur, what are you supposed to do with that goat? Give it a patch and send it out into the desert. Right? Where's it going to go? It'll go further out into the desert. Where are you going? You're going this way, that way, you know. Right? What's the problem? Is that you don't want that goat is very kosher. That goat is all perek. in Shnei Seirim, in Maseches Yuma, that that goat is kosher. If something happens to that goat on the way to where it's going, to the desert, right? The other goat inside has to also be exchanged. They're saying, you have to go back. The whole Yom Kippur can be, right? Make sure that nothing happens to this goat. They're two together. This goat is very kosher, right? So when Bnei Yisrael are living in the Midbar, and there's no fear that after you let this goat, give it a portion, let it go out into the desert, that anyone's ever going to see this goat again, and possibly come to use it, right? So that is Ketzel HaMidbar. But what happens when Bnei Yisrael come across the Yarden, and the place where they did this was in Gilgal first. But let's say you go to Yerushalayim, right? And you have this service in the Beis HaMikdash, and you send a goat out. If you send a goat out five kilometers away, 10 kilometers away from Yerushalayim, someone's going to get that goat. Someone's going to eat kachim. You follow what I'm saying? It's big time to eat if you let that goat do what you did in the Midbar. They like not to find a cliff in the Midbar where they were. I don't know. But Yerushalayim is surrounded by hills. There's plenty of good places to push down a goat. Alright? I just don't want that goat to be in the hands of someone where they could be doing kachim. You follow me? So you see what's happening? Because of a change in metzius, right? So the Gemara, the Vilna Gaon says, we can darshan it out from the psukim themselves. We're ready for this change because of a new metzius. You have to be careful because this is what can lead to conservative Judaism, where everything changes because, well, kashrus was originally given to us because of health problems. Now we know how to cook pork so that it doesn't give us trichinosis. Now we know how to get shellfish deep out in the ocean where it's not scavenged food. So now we can eat it. Those are the arguments that were originally made. So the Vilna Gaon here, he says, you ever see this? Ayin tachas ayin? What are the letters under the word ayin? What's the letter after a pe, an ayin? What's the letter after a yud? What's the letter after a nun? So ayin tachas ayin. Go look under the eye, and that's where you'll get a hint.
But
that's the film going. He could find anything, anywhere, anytime, anyhow. I'm just saying that this was their way of showing, hey, I didn't make this up. This is the Torah itself, hinted that one day this would be money. Even if at the time of the Torah, says Avraham ben Rambam, it was meant to be mamish. There is a Tanaic opinion as such. Just be very, very careful with interpretation. We have to approach these things very carefully. Right? Okay. But in its conclusion, lex talionis in Jewish law and Torah law is only with taking a life and with nothing else. Okay? Clear? Alright? It's only with taking a life and with nothing else. It's just fascinating that you have some ancient codes that have the death penalty for stealing. They felt that we need such a strong deterrent against stealing, but you can buy yourself off of murder. It's really very strange because they don't have a system that values life because you're B'Tzelem Elokim, or that values life because we're all in this together. And no, your life is the value of your life is how much do you mean to the service of the gods or the head god, so that they keep us all powerful and win our next battle and give us the crops that we need next year. If you deny your neighbor's family the service of the gods of their sons, so your family will be denied the same. Right? Okay. It's very firm. Okay. Although this was very much the topic of the Daf Yomi the last 2 weeks, treatment of slaves and knocking out their eye or their tooth. We have a very, very loud Daf Yomi Zogar in my shul. And I thought, we have the staff, the non-Jewish staff in the shul who are starting to prepare for minyanim and starting to clean up. And we have a school and building. And so I said, listen, when you're teaching sugyas, a about your slave and knocking out his eye and knocking out his tooth. And try, just don't scream it out. I don't want to say what we're talking about, the laws of owning slaves. Let's leave it. But we talked earlier in the semester that the Eved that we talk about in Parshas Mishpatim and Parshas Bahar should not be, don't have the picture in your mind of the slave who is working under great duress, right? And is chained against his will, Okay. The Torah is the only ancient code that has the law that if you kill your slave, it's anything different than if you kill your donkey. Right? Non-Hebrew slave, non-Israelite slave, the Torah has the death penalty for that. Okay, he's not your life. He's also in God's image. Okay. All right. So I'm going to skip over the psukim to talk about the tooth or the right. What I'd like to talk about is is the let's take a look at multiple punishments. Perek Chav Aleph Pasuk Lamed Zayin.
Can we answer why the miscarriage laws?
Why we have it in Mishpatim?
Yeah.
I mean it's really meant at its core, not so much to teach the unusual case of miscarriage, as much as to teach lex talionis. And the halacha is that although it says v'nosata nefesh tachas nefesh, this is the chiddush of the Rambam, and the Rambam, is that at that time that would be the law. You need to kill A, but you kill B. We need greater deterrence in the desert against violence. They're living in a violent place where tempers may rise, and we make sure that you see right away clearly that give you this strong deterrence. But then, when things calm down, we're going to set up systems. Well, you know what? We're going to give you Ir Miklat. We already had that before, remember? City of Refuge. We're going to allow family members to take vengeance if you're not in the Ir Miklat. And we have these safeguards to make sure that there is not a lot of unrequited murder in our nation. You feel you hear it? In other words, in Mesopotamia, the reason why I don't want someone guilty of murder to be going around is because maybe he'll murder someone else. Bad for society to have murderers on their bones free. According to the Torah, try to think of a particular mitzvah that appears in Devarim that brings out this point clearly, is that according to the Torah, if there's a murderer who goes free, it's not a question of the danger of society. Well, that policeman who will police the area, make sure he doesn't kill someone else. A murderer who goes free is a blotch upon our nation. It is an unrequited life. He took a tzelem elokim, and he's getting away with it. What law am I talking about here? Remember?
Eglaruf.
Yes. That if someone dies and we can't attribute an action, an explanation, a meaning, how did this happen to this guy? We have to go through this elaborate, detailed ritual called Eglaruf. Everyone know what I'm talking about? No, I'll explain. Right? You all know it? The end of Parsha Shoftim? The Torah goes through this elaborate detail of what the elders of the nearby city have to do. In order to atone for this. And if they find the murderer afterwards, he gets killed anyway. But until then, we need a kapara. If you know the lingo, it's like an asham talui. It's like you're bringing an asham because I'm not sure if I did it or not, so this will be a kapara in the meantime. If I find out that I did eat what was actually chayla, which wasn't shuma, I'd have to bring a kapara to answer that. And if I did bring an asham talui, in the meantime, it's kapara. However, this is stupid. It's because every life is a tzel melukim. If you can't tell how this, it's tragedy enough if I can find the murderer. It's even worse if I can't. Right? All right. Let's talk about multiple punishments. Another way to punish someone and to deter someone is to convince them that there's a lot more to lose than to gain. Does crime pay? If he edits his crime, doesn't pay. You know, it depends where you live. You know, in the 60s and the 70s, crime definitely did pay here in the city. Right? The only thing keeping you from being criminal was your morality. Right? Crime, you know, crime rates rose 500-600% in a short time here in New York. I remember it. I was in the middle of it. And all of a sudden, it just dipped. Lots of studies try to explain what happened, who's responsible, who gets credit, who doesn't get. Okay. It's in the news now, actually. Some politicians, what caused that. But whether deterrence works now as much as it's supposed to have worked then, it depends on the statistics. I don't have statistics at the time to make any study. But what I can do is read Pasuk Lamed Zayin that says, Ki yignov ish shor oser. We're in Perikof Al Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Everyone have it? Chafalot Lamed Zayin. Let's tell you, we're going to read the last pasuk in Chafalot and the first three pasukim in Chaf Beis. The Gemara Baba Kama considered that these are intertwined. Why is it a new perek? Why do I feel I don't need to answer that? Because the prakim were given by Christians. Now, Bishop Langton, who assigned these prakim in the 12th century was acting not arbitrarily, to be sure, right? But he certainly was not doing it with chachma or knowledge of what Chazal have to say about these prakim. Right, I mean, it's stark in this week's parsha. Did you see Parshas Tazria has two prakim? Chapter 12 has 8 psukim. Chapter 13 has 59 psukim. What chacham comes of that? Right. All right, because he gave them by topics. Chapter 8 is about the woman giving birth. Chapter 12 is a woman giving birth. Chapter 13 starts about the mitzvah. Right. Okay. Anyway. Chazal understood that the multiple payments of 4 or 5 or 2 somehow connected, but the position, the reading of these four psukim is going to sound a little convoluted. So let's do it together. Ki yignov ish shor oseh. If a man steals an ox or a sheep, utevacho o mechoro, and he slaughters it or he sells it. In other words, the thing isn't here anymore. I don't have the original thing I stole. Hamisho bakor yishalem tachas ha-shor v'arbat zon tachas ha-seh. You shall pay 5 times for the shor and 4 times for the seh. What are your questions?
I'm just keeping it the shor.
Yeah, you used to pay 5.
Nothing went on the shor instead.
Yeah, you used to pay 5 oxen or 4 sheep. Now, that's a question you can say. Can you get away with paying the amount? Find out what the ox is worth. Go look at the stock price for the day for an ox, and the stock price for a sheep. You have to pay 5 times this, 4 times this. Fine, stop me, you can do that. You don't have to actually give a sheep or an ox, right? Okay, what else? Any other questions?
Is there a question on this? Should we have to pay equal amount?
Society can decide to pay more for certain things. Why not? Come on, what else?
Why
the difference
for each one?
Why a difference? Okay, that's one. And okay, but get back to the animals. So the answer to that might be from 2 different directions, and both appear in the Gemara. From the standpoint of the person stealing the thing, or the standpoint of the person who lost this thing. I mean, we're not ranchers here, so is the loss of an ox greater than the loss of a sheep?
Probably.
Maybe. Right? Which has greater marketable value? Which does more for you? Right? Most people just grow sheep for one reason, for the wool. The ox you grow maybe you keep for numerous reasons. Right? Mostly to plow, and then you know when they're too old to do those things anymore, then it's time to eat them. Right? Okay. What else? So you asked why the difference? Why is one more than the other? Okay. I mean, the common question is this limited to these two animals? Right? What about a camel? What if someone steals a camel and sells it? You have to pay four or five camels. Anything else? Does the law of Nimkar v'Gneva So apply here too? I skipped it, but there's a law earlier that if you steal and you can't pay back, then he gets sold into slavery. Actually, it's coming up, and it's coming up again. Does that apply here too? If you steal a sheep that's worth $1,000 and you can't pay back $4,000, you get sold into slavery? I might not have thought to ask that question here until I read a few psukim from now. So let's do that. Start Perikop Beis, please. Im b'machteres yimotzei haganov. Wow. Im b'machteres yimotzei haganov. Behu kova meis. What's a machteres? Have you heard that in early Israeli history? What was machteres? Machteres is a tunnel in Hebrew, but what was the famous machteres with a capital M? What? Yeah. No, in Israel, they called the machteres. They used to make a mishaberach for Tzahal and the Irgun and the machteres. Right? You know, here it is.
It's like if you break it, the breath.
the Romish soldiers who were. The history with Begin and Rabin put it this way, the Jews who blew up the King David Hotel. That was the Machteres, okay? Alright? Okay, so I'm just saying, they took that name from this pasuk. Alright? What does it mean, Pshat? He's secretly digging into your house. What's the normal way to get into someone's house? The front door. Alright? If a Machteres, he would say, have a novel who cover mace, ain lo domin. This is cryptic. If this robber, he's not stealing sheep and oxen anymore, but we'll see that that's why the Christian finn started a new pasuk here, but we'll see that the next few pasukim will connect. Right? If he's found burrowing into someone's house and he was beaten and killed, what are you doing in my house? Right? There are no witnesses. Well, guess what? You're dead. Right? Ain lo damim. What does ain lo damim mean? Who are we talking about? Who's the lo? What? Right. The low says the Gemara. This is the. I'm not sure if it's the pshat, but that's what the Gemara says in the 8th paragraph in Sanhedrin. Ein lo domim, which Shmuel just said correctly, is the famous sugya of Baba Machteres. Right? It's brought in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, not in Baba Kama, as a tangent to the story of Ben Sorer Umore. 8th paragraph in Sanhedrin, we used to learn in high school, Ben Sorer Umore. Very, very famous, the Shloshi Aro, the Yad Yavar. What does Baba Machteres have to do with Ben Sorer Umore? You don't know Shem Sofer. They're not judged for what they've done yet. They're judged for what they're likely to do, or what they're surely came to do. Right? They're judged on what hasn't happened yet, which is a big chiddush. So this guy who's Baba Machteres, right? If he is beaten and killed, ain lo damim. So the first parish is the man who came into the house has no blood. What's the lumdus? He's dead already. You didn't kill a living man. Now, the pshat, I think, of ain lo damim is, please help me here. The pshat of ain lo damim is, he's not chayef for killing him. The owner of the house who shot him dead and is going to tell the police, I saw a man in my house, I didn't know what he's going to do, he's going to kill my children, right? I'm not going to tap him on the shoulder and say, what is your intent here? You break into my house, ain't no dummy, right? Pshat is ain't lead dummy. The owner of the house has not spilled blood. I have no blood on my hands. I'm not going to put my family's life in danger. Following? You agree? Okay. So the longest is that what happens if he comes in on a Friday night and it's Shabbos? Killing someone is one of the 39 melachos, right? Now, so is picking out pits from watermelon. But in other words, I'm taking a human life. Am I allowed to do that on Shabbos, or do I have to let him? I'll sneak under my bed and let him take away all my silver. Right? So what's the longest? Now with the second pair on my gave. What? He's not alive. He's not alive. It's not until it's Neshama. It's a big Kiddush, right? He's dead. He's already dead. I mean, it's a big Kiddush. I mean, you want to get really lumped? There's all kinds of things. He's not dead. He's not alive anymore. You see the Tame? But the Kohen lives there. Right? And he tells his wife, he said, you shoot him, I'm going to get out of the house. So I'm not Tame. But no, honey, he's dead already. Come on, he's dead before I shoot him. No, I don't know. You can take this. How far do you want to take this? What if he made a neder? I'm making a neder. I will have no hana'ah from living men over 30 years old. It's no problem. He's dead. I take this far in every besatka. I'll tell you in Afkamina whether this guy is dead or alive. You hear? But the point is, Ein lo damin, the Gemara says in both directions. I think the pshat is, you think it over. What are you thinking more in your mind? The pshat is, the man who kills him, the owner of the house, who stands up for his house, who kills him, is he has an Ein lo damin. He doesn't have blood on his hands. He's not a murderer. But the Gemara makes a drash. Ein lo damin even goes on the guy who's stealing into your house. He's a dead man as soon as he came in. So what's the nidon al shem sofo? Right? When you hear someone downstairs in your basement rummaging through, right? I make sure it's not your cousin trying to come to give you a surprise party or something like that, maybe before you shoot. Right? There's actually a true story that I'm going to probably find it online someplace. And when it's someone that's online, who knows if it's a true story or not. But this guy calls the police in this rural town somewhere in West Virginia, and he says, I see my wife and I see someone is in our garage. And they're rummaging around. I said, there's three of them. And they're taking everything out of my garage. He goes, can you please send over a trooper? He goes, I'm sorry, we have no available troopers. I'm sorry, we'll just. And he calls back 5 minutes later. And he says, please, I see they're taking everything out of my garage. And they're putting it into a truck. Can you please send over someone to save my house? And he says, no, sorry, we have no, maybe in a half hour we'll have someone to send over. He calls back in 5 minutes. And he says, you don't have to send over anyone. I just shot all three of them. In 5 minutes, there was a helicopter, a SWAT team, and three trooper cars surrounding his house. And they caught all three of them in the act and arrested them. And then they went over to the guy in the house and they said, I thought you said you shot them. And of course, he then responded,
I thought they weren't available.
I thought you said you had no troopers available. When someone's stealing into your house, every society feels you have the right to make a stand for your house. That's what the Gemara says. When you feel someone rummaging downstairs, it probably makes sense to make sure it's not your son or something looking at something that, who knows. So the Gemara says that the Gemara says it has to be, and that's really what the next pasuk is, and that's what I'll tell you to prepare for next time. It says, Im zarcho ha-shemesh olav, damin lo. If the sun shines on him, now we're clearly talking about the rummager, the ganef. If the sun shines on him, shalem yishalem. He has to pay. In elo v'nibkar v'gnev osav. You can't kill him, but he has to pay if he stole or broke something or whatever. Right? So what is this? Is this metaphorical, the sun shining on him? Is there a difference between whether this guy broke into your house during the day or at night?
Yeah.
Right? So that's machlokes, the Rambam and the Raivit, Rashi and Ibn Ezra. All Rishonim take two sides on this. Should there be a difference between this guy who rummages through your house during the day? Might there be other laws like arson that should be treated differently, whether you do it during the day or you do it at night? We'll talk about that next class. Hold on to this because you're going to be asked to remember some of this material for the final that we're going to have. And we're going to answer that question. What is this in Zorcha Hashemesh Allah? The sun shines on him. What do we mean by that? Should we treat him differently if he breaks in during the day or if he breaks in at night?